This podcast is designed to help you understand the laws of our land. I am your host, Hattie Savari, and here to help you every step of the way, whether you are a tenant, landlord, parent, child, employee, employer, neighbour or business owner, and we are all most certainly consumers. The law is in your life every single day with over 180 episodes and 5 million downloads. Get ready to listen and empower yourself with tons of jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com. Hello and welcome to our podcast at Get Legally Speaking. Our legal conversation today will be about family mediation. I'm here today with Miss Sarah Cooper from Thomas More Chambers in London in Lincoln's Inn. As well as being a highly experienced and senior barrister in family law, Sarah is also a resolution-trained family mediator and a part-time family judge. Sarah is a robust and tenacious lawyer, equally adept at handling witnesses as arguing the finer points of law, and she specialises in complex international family cases. Thank you for joining us, Sarah.
Thank you.
Family mediation, Sarah, this is an area which you know a lot about, so I'm really pleased to be doing this podcast. We've had a lot of questions come through our website on family mediation. So let's start by explaining to our listeners, what is meant by family mediation? What do we mean by that term?
Well, what it is, it's a process designed to see if parties can make agreements about whatever really that is in dispute between the two of them. What it isn't, it is not some psychological service. It's not for the purposes of reconciliation, which sometimes people think that it is. So it's for a situation where parties have decided to go their separate ways, whether they were married or whether they weren't, but there are issues that they can't agree about, maybe in relation to money, maybe in relation to children, maybe in relation to something else.
Okay, so when you say it's not a form of reconciliation, and you're right, there is this conception that mediation can help you reconcile as well. I mean, is it absolutely, are we saying this process in family mediation, it's to iron out any issues that you can't agree,
yes,
but it's not to say, well, you look like you're actually cozying up again and you're
no,
you know, and regretful about the separation.
No.
Why don't you go away and have another think
about
it?
Most, but not all mediators are in fact trained family lawyers. There are some mediators who are not trained family lawyers, who possibly are psychologists, possibly financial advisors, but the vast majority are trained family lawyers. We do not have the skill set for sort of family counselling.
Yeah.
That's not what this is.
Yes. No, that thank you for that. I think it's important to clarify that, actually, because of that misconception. Okay, so the next question is, how is it set up? Where will it take place? How long does it take? You know, people tend to think, oh God, where do I go for this? How does it work? The basics.
Right. Well, mediation is a relatively new kid on the block, although it has been around in England and Wales for probably about 20 years. Now it's actually a part of the court system. So unless you have a very urgent matter, or there is some very clear reason, such as domestic violence, why mediation is not suitable, then generally people are expected to try mediation first before going to court in relation either to money or in relation to disputes about children. So that's really where it sits. Family mediation is not the same as other types of mediation.
Right.
So it has a special, possibly unique way of operating. Generally, family mediators will only have the parties themselves, will not have any lawyers or other people in the room, and both parties will be expected to be in the room with the mediator. It is possible for there to be shuttle mediation where the parties sit in different rooms, but that would be very unusual in a family mediation setting.
And this is why you say if mediation may not be suitable, if there's, for example, domestic violence that's happened and it's not possible for the parties to sit in the same room,
yes,
or it's gone too far. I mean, saying it's gone too far, what's too far, you know, because...
Well, the mediator has to take a view as to whether or not it's appropriate or not. So there are situations, clearly, where mediation is not appropriate.
And so the courts expect for people to try mediation before they all go to court to argue in a courtroom,
yes,
the finances of the marriage or perhaps children arrangements.
That is right. There are exceptions to this, but generally the proposed applicant is expected to attend what we call a MIAM, which is a mediation information and assessment meeting. And at that meeting, the person will be given details of the mediation process. They need to meet with a mediator. They do have to pay for the MIAM, and then the mediator signs a certificate indicating that they have explained mediation to the person and whether the mediator considered it's appropriate or not, and whether that person wishes to engage in mediation. And really, you need, if you're making an application to the court, you would need to have a completed MIAM form.
Yes.
Unless,
yes,
there are some very urgent circumstances.
Or special circumstances, which your lawyers will be able to say, okay, that seems like a special circumstance.
Yes, generally there would be a MIAM form. The obligation under the court rules is not actually to engage in mediation with the other party. The court cannot order parties to mediate.
Right.
The court can order parties to attend a MIAM, because,
right,
that is not actually the mediation itself. It's a mediation information and assessment
where people
meeting
are giving information individually,
yes,
at separate times,
yes,
and it could be through separate mediators,
yes,
about what is the mediation about, what you can expect as outcomes in terms of if it goes well and you do start coming to mutually agreeable terms, and therefore people may change their minds and say,
that's,
well, now,
right,
I know more about it. I would like to try it before we go and spend potentially tens of thousands of pounds in court trying to fight over the finances or the children arrangements or whatever point it is that they can't quite,
well,
agree.
Well, that's absolutely right. My view is that there is never a right or a wrong time for mediation. And it's a message I'd like to get out there, because even if mediation hasn't seemed appropriate at the beginning of the process, perhaps during the process, the parties do want to have a go and have a try at mediation, because it may be that what the parties needed was some legal advice at the beginning of the process to get things going.
Yeah.
But equally, any court's going to be very sympathetic to a short delay if the parties say, well, actually, we've decided to have another try at mediation.
To try and settle it ourselves.
Yes.
With a mediator.
With
assistance.
A mediator. So that, I would say, always consider mediation at all stages,
yeah, that's
of any litigation.
Advice. That's very good advice, because what generally happens is you're given the opportunity at the beginning. Your lawyers will perhaps say, look, you've got to go to a MIAM meeting and get a certificate and understand the process. And, you know, some lawyers say, well, you know, if you can't mediate, don't worry, let's just carry on and get into court. But you might be, like you say, in the court process, maybe after a second or third hearing and things are dragging out. And if tensions have calmed down a bit as well on both sides, and you think, well, actually, let's give it a go. I mean, I always say you've got nothing to lose by mediation. I say this to all our clients. You've got nothing to lose. You've only got something to gain if it works. And it will cost you a hell of a lot more than the legal fees if you are to carry on in court battling it out. And getting a judge potentially to decide the fate of your case, rather than you having that power with the person on the other side that you're trying to agree these things with. So where when we say how does it set up and where does it take place, so you should ask your lawyer, your solicitor, Well, they should be at some point be advising you before they issue any application, actually, to do with the children or the finances, that you need to attend at a MIAM meeting if you're the applicant.
That's right.
Because then the respondent gets invited to attend by the mediator.
Yes.
Isn't that right, Sarah?
But not with you
yeah.
at the outset.
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
So initially, both parties would be seen separately for
yes.
separate intake meetings. Then after that, and remembering, of course, that the entire process is entirely voluntary,
yes.
which is why the court cannot order people to attend mediation. Then, if both parties want to, the actual nuts and bolts of the mediation can then start with all three people, so the mediator and both people, sitting around a table and seeing what can be agreed.
Yes, yes. And the mediation will take place in a mediator's office.
Yes.
So you will attend at the office. I think I've been informed, because as we know, legal teams do not go to MIAM meetings. It lasts about an hour, hour and a half. So it's your opportunity really to ask and discuss with the mediator, what is a mediation about? What to expect?
Yes.
If you are nervous about sitting in the same room, the mediator has the opportunity to explain the whole process to you, and then you can make a more informed decision as to whether it can help you in your situation, or maybe you think it can't. Okay, so again, I think you've answered this question, because the question is, do I have to attend if I do not wish to? No, because it's not something that the court can order for you to do. You attend if you want to, but what we generally say is, if you don't attend at a mediation and you don't try, if there's no really special circumstances as to why you can't sit in the same room as the other person, the court sometimes can raise an eyebrow as to why hasn't mediation been tried. If it's,
well, I think, you know, that's right, and certainly particularly in the context of disputes about money, there is a risk that if you have refused to try mediation without there being any justification, that there could be an impact on legal costs.
Mm.
So, you know, there is a risk.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, and what we mean by that is that if you refuse to go to mediation because you said, no, I'm not interested in, I'd rather go all the way to court, and the other person then succeeds over you in some form. I mean, you know, finances are never a win-lose situation, I don't think. It's more a division of what's going on. The other side can say, well, I was happy to go to mediation before we spent another £20,000 on legal fees, and the court could take a view.
Well, that is exactly the point. So it's something always to bear in mind and take very seriously and listen to your own legal advice.
Yes, no, indeed. And how is a mediator selected, Sarah? So who selects the mediator?
Well, either party can suggest somebody. The really key issue for people listening to this podcast is to select somebody who's been properly trained. So there is an organisation called the Family Mediation Council, and that is an umbrella body formed of various important institutions, including the Law Society, Resolution, which is the Family Lawyers Association, and also the Family Mediators Association. And mediators who are listed on the Family Mediation Council website or on one of its component parts websites should be properly trained. So what you're looking for is a trained and preferably accredited mediator,
yes.
a family mediator. Family mediation, the training is very different to civil mediation. So if you go down the line of a civil mediator for a family dispute, then the mediation model may be very different.
Yes, yes, no, indeed. And what you could do is you or your legal team, your solicitors, can submit the name of one or two mediators to the other side for them to say, yes, we can agree one of the two. Or you
That's
could
right.
ask, you could ask them to submit, but I think that's very really sound advice. Check out who the mediator is.
Absolutely.
In family mediation, make sure they're a family mediator. I think that's really important, because we've sat in sort of not mediations, but we've sat in settlement meetings where we're trying to agree terms with the other side, and some of them have been with a mediator in between. So it's not a mediation, it's a more of a settlement meeting. And civil litigation, although family finances tend to become that quite quickly in a way, is very different to the way it's done in the family procedures. And it's interesting, and it's very important, I think, to make sure that your mediator is relevant to what you're doing, whether it's civil, in this case, it's family. Okay, what the next question that we've got is, what questions should I ask my legal team before the mediation takes place? Because bearing in mind, mediation is for you, the other side, and the mediator. Three people. The legal team do not come into the room, do not attend the mediation with you. Are there any questions that you think are key for an individual to ask their solicitor or their legal team before they head off and go to a mediation to try and settle? You know, we're talking about finances, which are key, children's arrangements.
Well, when I was trained as a mediator, the training always incorporated the assumption that mediation would take place in the shadow of the law. So in other words, that you wouldn't just go to mediation, but ideally you should also be taking legal advice about your position, whether it's in relation to money or whether it's in relation to children, so that you have an idea as to possible outcomes, yes, given your own circumstances. So my general advice would be to take some basic advice from your lawyers about the likely outcomes.
Yes.
As we know, because we have a discretionary system in relation to money, there is not just one outcome possible. There is always a spectrum. So if you can find out from your lawyer more or less what sort of outcome might be possible, then you can understand and have that knowledge before you go into the mediation, so that you are negotiating
You know,
within the right bounds.
Yes, no, I think that's really key. Again, another key piece of advice, because you want to be able to have in your mind, if I agree X, Y, and Z, what does that mean as an outcome for me?
Yes.
Because you don't have your legal teams there to be able to agree and say, oh, look, he's saying or she's saying this. Do you think I should agree this? It's your decision. The mediator's not there to decide for you.
No.
Mediator's there to try and encourage you both to settle.
I think it's also important to say that obviously the mediator cannot advise either of the parties. The mediator is free to state what the law is, but, you know, many times it's quite difficult to almost be objective about what the law is. So that may be a difficult task. And if it's a matter of advice, you know, well, should I agree this? That is not something that a mediator could possibly be involved in, because they are independent.
Yes. Yes, no, indeed. And I mean, the mediator's there to address all the issues that you're trying to settle on. So the mediator is not there to say, yes, sir, I think that's a really good deal for you. Or, yes, madam, I think you should be taking this. You know, this is as far as you're going to get. So I think it's important that you do understand what agreeing certain outcomes will mean to you. And you also understand what the mediator's role is there.
Yes.
Which is great. We've already addressed, can I bring my legal representative or a family member to support me at the mediation? Now, we know that lawyers can't attend. I mean, are there any exceptions to that?
Well, sometimes.
Sarah, and particularly with family members, if you think, well, I do really want to take a family member with me.
I have never known anyone allow family members. I have encountered family mediations where lawyers have come in. It tends to be limited to one session. If, say, there is an issue about a particular dispute, a particular part of the dispute, which very much is a matter of law, then mediators may well say, well, you know, why don't we have one session with the lawyers?
Right.
For example, if there were dispute on finances, there might be an issue as to the relevance of an inheritance, let's just say, and the mediator might consider that the mediation would be helped by having the lawyers in there. But generally, no. Family members, they're free to accompany you to the offices, but they would not, in my experience, be permitted to sit in the room during the mediation.
Yes, because obviously what mediation is trying to achieve is a settlement. And if you've got a family member there that could be agitating the other person or creating the whole emotional roller coaster, because, you know, it's a very emotional time when things are going wrong in any relationship, I think, it's not going to help, is it?
Well, it may not.
Yes. No, I understand. I get it. Okay, so the next question is, can children be involved in the mediation process?
The answer to that is yes, but it would
involve... I honestly didn't think... Wow. Is there an age limit then?
There probably is, but for a mediator to involve a child, that would require the mediator to have additional specialist training. So if there is any prospect of a child being involved, and presumably that would only be in relation to a child who was aged, say, 10 or over, who wished to be involved, then you would need to identify a highly trained specialist mediator. So not all mediators have trained to mediate with children. So it is possible, but it clearly would need to be done very, very carefully.
Yes.
And so that is the thought behind the scheme.
And the last question that I'm going to try and squeeze in, Sarah, because I feel it's very important, is everything confidential in mediation, or can what I say be used against me in court or in correspondence?
Well, when you go into a mediation, the first thing that will happen is both of you will need to sign up to a mediation agreement. And within that mediation agreement, it will make it clear that what happens in the mediation, in general terms, remains confidential. It certainly can't be used to say, well, you agreed X, Y, Z, but now you're saying something different. However, particularly in relation to children matters, there is always an exclusion for any serious matters of child welfare. So if there was any very serious allegations made, then no doubt that could be disclosed. But in general terms, the purpose of the sort of the general confidentiality in relation to mediation is to encourage the parties to be open about the negotiation, knowing full well that it can't then be held against them at some later point during the litigation.
Yes, that's important, because I think lots of people, you know, have concerns about that, in that, you know, I'll go to a mediation and I'll be encouraged to speak freely and I'll speak freely and maybe something will be used against me. So no, it's absolutely confidential.
Barring certain rather exceptional circumstances.
Sure. I'm going to get one more question in.
Yes.
Because I absolutely have to. This is too important not to fit into this podcast. I know we're running over time. And the question is an agreement made in a mediation set in stone? Are they legally binding agreements?
It's a very good question, and one in relation to which is a slightly nuanced answer. What happens in a mediation is the mediator will draw up at the end a memorandum of agreement. So,
provided you've come to an agreement.
Yes.
Yes.
So if there is, and if not, it'll just be a general memorandum. Now, that won't be in a legally binding form. And what is then anticipated is that both parties will take that back to their lawyers, and then it will be almost translated into a legally binding form, and with the benefit of both parties having taken some further advice. So the answer is, it rather depends on your mediator, because some mediators, I understand, are now offering to draw up the heads of agreement, or rather the memorandum of agreement, into something legally binding. So if you have got to that stage, then the answer is yes, it would be binding, or could be binding, even if it were not a court order. But if you haven't quite got to that stage, then you're probably still in a position where you can take the document back and show your lawyers and consider it further.
Right.
So it's rather shades of grey, actually. All right.
Right.
It depends how you choose to utilise the mediation process.
Yes. Because
you can make it more binding for yourself if you wish to.
If you thought, look, I'm really hopeful that I'm going to get us, I'm going to be able to settle, and I want whatever is agreed to be in stone, then make sure you choose a mediator that will draw up
heads but it
of terms
was,
and ask you both to sign it there.
Yes, but you would need to be sure clearly that the other side was also prepared to sign up on that basis.
Yes, yes.
And sometimes it may be better for both of you to go and take further advice, because if you then sign up to something with legal advice, the court is more likely to uphold it as binding.
Yes, yes. No, indeed. Sarah, that's all we've got time for. Thank you ever so much
for
your time.
Pleasure, as always.
Once again. Don't forget to click and subscribe to our podcasts, and you can find us on Twitter, Facebook and LinkedIn by searching Get Legally Speaking. Also visit our website at getlegallyspeaking.com. Thank you very much for listening.